Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. And I'm your host, John Hansen. And on today's show, we are going to have part two of our second interview with Samir Banute. We did part one last week. And I want to apologize right off the bat for the poor audio quality on that interview. I did get a chance to check it out on my phone as well. And the audio was pretty bad. But the good news is the audio is much better on this part of the interview. Samir was talking to us on his phone, but he was doing Skype on his phone. It wasn't like phone call. So he was moving around the house. And for whatever reason, the place he moved to on the second part of our interview, the one we're going to hear today, it sounds a lot better, so you'd be happy to hear that. So in today's interview, Samir is going to talk to us about what happened at the 1984 Mr. Olympia, where he was the returning champ, having won it in 1983. And unfortunately, Samir only placed sixth in 1984, and then he had kind of a falling out with the IFBB, and he's going to talk about that. He's going to talk about what happened with him and Joe Weider. And then he came back in 1985, but he came back to the WABA organization, which was Serge Nubre's organization, and he won their pro championships, their world pro championships in 1985 out in Worcester, Massachusetts. And he had a great lineup of a lot of great AAU stars, including Lance Dreher and Jeff King, who was the 1983 Mr. America and a really great bodybuilder. A lot of people wanted to see Jeff go to the Mr. Olympia. So Samir beat Jeff King at that show also. So that was a really great competition. And then Samir is going to talk about the rest of his career when he decided to come back into the IFBB in 1988 until he decided to retire, which I think was around 1996. So we got a really good interview coming up with Samir Banute in a minute. You guys are going to like this a lot. But before we get to that, I want to mention that we are brought to you by our sponsor, Old School Labs. I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. It's the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe contest in 2012. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner, Vintage Burn, which is the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, which is the two-stage pre-workout, or Vintage Brawn, which is the triple protein isolate powerhouse. It's packed with eggs, milk, and beef protein. Their products have no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. Old School Labs is also the home of 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banute and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you will get 12% off your order when you order them at oldschoollabs.com. Old School Labs supplements that make sense. All right. And I am coming off of my hernia surgery that I talked about last week. So I just had that on Thursday. So it's about been 3 days now since I had the surgery and it went pretty well. It was just a small incision in the upper abdominal area right between the two upper abs. And I guess they just stitched it up. I asked the nurse when I was in the recovery room, she said it took about 11 minutes total to do the operation. So now I just got to wait for the recovery. I got 4 weeks where I cannot do any weight training at all, which is going to be really tough. I'm already climbing the walls, if you can believe it or not. I'm ready to get back to doing something. I think it's just from laying around for the last 3 days doing nothing, just watching TV and trying to rest it. But it feels pretty good. It's a little sore. You know, it's obviously like bruised, and that's where they made the incision, so it's going to be sore for a while. But I have to just be really careful and not lift anything for about a month. So that's, to me, it's going to be the hard part of the whole recovery process. And then after that, I'll go to the gym and I can train for another 4 weeks and just go light. So I will let you guys, I'll keep you guys updated on how it goes along the way. I'm not one for taking layoffs, so it's going to be something new for me. This will be the longest I've taken off probably in 20 years when I tore my bicep back in 2000. and I had to take about 3 months off, I think, or 4 months off. So this will definitely be the longest time since then. I think I've only taken maybe a week at a time since that in the last 20 years. So you got to do what you got to do. And I'm glad I got it done. I'm glad I finally got this thing fixed. And I'm glad it's over with. So now it's just going through the recovery process and getting better. But I appreciate everybody emailing me. I mentioned that I was going in for surgery on Facebook. And I got a ton of responses. A lot of people responded. And I also put another posting up saying, you know, I was doing good after I got home. And then a lot of people responded to that. So I appreciate everybody who reached out to me on Facebook or email or whatever and was checking up on me to see how I did. All right. When we get done with our interview with Samir today, I'm going to read another article. And this one is from the March 1984 issue of Iron Man. And of course, it coincides with Samir. And I'm going to read about the 1983 Mr. Olympia contest, which was written by Gary Bartlett. It's the contest report about the 1983 Olympia, which was in Munich, Germany. And this was Samir's big win. Gary Bartlett wrote a really good article for the March 84 issue of Iron Man. So I'm going to read that as soon as we get done with our interview. So be sure to stay tuned for that. I got some good news for some upcoming interviews we got coming up too. We got Albert Beckles, who I'll be interviewing tomorrow, the legendary Albert Beckles, the ageless wonder. So that should be a great interview. Albert had an incredible career starting in the 1960s. And going all the way up until the 1990s, and he was one of the real true legends of the sport, took second in the 1985 Mr. Olympia to Lee Haney and was competing against guys 20, 30 years younger than himself for a long time. One of the best arms in the sport, great bodybuilder, so I'm really looking forward to talking to Albert this week. And then on Tuesday, I'm going to be interviewing Jim Seitzer from Columbus, Ohio. And Jim was a top amateur bodybuilder in the 1970s. I think he took second to Ron Tufel in 1979 at the Mr. America. Really good, powerful physique. In fact, speaking of power, I think he has a powerlifting background. And he was working with Louis Simmons for a while. And, of course, you know Louis Simmons from West Side Barbell. Speaking of that, by the way, I've been watching TV, so much TV for the last couple of days. I was checking out Netflix because I can't do anything except lay around. And I saw this documentary about Louis Simmons and West Side Barbell. It's called West Side Versus the World. So if you're looking for something good to watch, check that out. A lot of great stories in there. Some of the crazy powerlifting stories and the crazy powerlifters they had in that gym. So it was really, really interesting. It's about a 90-minute documentary. I also saw another one about Callum Van Moger, the bodybuilder slash actor who played Arnold in the movie Bigger about a year ago. And they have a I think it's from Generation Iron. Generation Iron does a lot of documentaries about bodybuilding, and they did one about Callum Van Moger, about all the injuries he had. He tore his bicep, and then he tore his quad. So I got about halfway through that. That was pretty interesting. But check out that West Side Barbell versus the World. That was a really good one. And we did get a couple emails from last week. Scott Barron, who is one of our big supporters here on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, he said, possible show topic. Both Joe Gold and Vince Gironda were legends and riddled with idiosyncrasies. What about a comparison contrast between these two? Crazy idea. Try reaching out to Carl Weathers and see if he will do an interview on your show, as he was trained by Vince Gironda. This will lend movie star power to the podcast. For some reason, I believe that Carl Weathers would agree to it. Okay. Sounds like a good idea, Scott. And then Mark Johnson said, hey, John, I just want to wish you the best of luck on your hernia surgery, and thank you so much for that Gary Leonard interview. It was great to learn so much more about him, and the fact that you took the time to ask him my question about his 86 Olympia posing routine just made it so special. Killer job with the new Samir interview as well. Our thoughts and prayers for a successful recovery are with you, John. All right. Thank you, Mark. Yeah, Mark was the one who wanted to know what music Gary posed to at that 1986 Mr. Olympia. So I did get the chance to ask that when I interviewed Gary. On our Bodybuilding Legends show Facebook page, I had a post about the Samir Banute interview from last week. And Shaddy Shatster said, great interview. Samir was at his best in 82 and 83, in my opinion. If Samir kept his condition, he would have won more Sandows. Looking forward to part two. And here, why Samir left the IFBB in 84 and he went to WABA and won the 85 and 86 championships there. Yes, that's what we're going to talk about today, Shaddy, so thank you for that comment. And on my Facebook page, Scott McNally said he was excited for the interview of Samir Part 1, and he asked Vijay Puri, and of course Scott and Vijay are the hosts of Bodybuilding Nerds Radio every week, and he said, do you think we'll get a Joe Weider impression? And Vijay said, I sure hope so. Pete Pingle said, this is awesome. I can't wait to hear it. Neville Galloy said, Samir was in breathtakingly great shape here. Rich Baker said, I was there taking pictures. Wayne Wilson said, Samir's audio was very hard to hear or understand, right? I understand that, Wayne. Cleared that up for this week, though. Cliff Kuhn said, John, be sure to ask him about George Turner training him. And that was it. So, yeah, we got a good interview with Samir this week. I think you guys will enjoy this. All right, so before we get to our interview with Samir, I also wanted to mention that we are brought to you by our other sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number out here in Tampa, Florida, which is 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. And if you mention that you heard the advertisement on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, you will get not only a free consultation, but they'll also give you 20% off your order. All right, so that is it for our opening. I'm going to keep it a little short because I'm trying to still recover here from this operation. So here is our interview, part two of our interview with Samir Banu, where we talk about his placing at the 1984 Mr. Olympia, where Lee Haney won and Samir dropped down to sixth place. And then Samir's placing in the WABA Championship the next year in 1985, and then his comeback into the IFBB in 1988. Here we go. So let's talk about 84, Samir, 1984 Olympia. And that was the year Sergio Oliva came back. So what did you think about Sergio coming back? Because that was a big deal with him coming back in 1984.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. Sergio, by the way, is one of my favorite bodybuilders of all time. He is unbelievable. You know, Sergio Oliva has the most gifted body.
Yeah.
You know, to me, Sergio Oliva is one of the king and good for me all. Yes. With Sergio. But was in the early 50s when he competed, right? In 84?
I think it was like mid-40s or something, yeah.
Yeah. In 84. Was it 84? Was it 84?
84, yeah.
It was, you know, I felt good in 84, but I ran into some issue, which has interfered a little bit on television here at home, and it's related to business and magazines and shit, and I hate to really talk about it. Negative. It wasn't me created. If something was created, they put me in a situation where it was stressful. It was stressful. And, you know, if your mind is wandering and you cannot focus 100%, you're more likely not to do good. But circumstances, I did my best. And I honestly felt I am top three in the 84 Olympia easily.
Mm-hmm.
And then they gave me lap in sixth place.
Yeah.
But I'm talk about it. Some negative crap. I don't want to mention it, but quite frankly, something was orchestrated, I guess, without a doubt.
Hmm.
I'm not told you this, like, I came in almost last with Ken Walk at the Olympia. You know, I wasn't ready.
Right.
But pretty good. And good enough to be in the top three without a doubt.
Yeah.
And then I did what I could, but you know, the final part, I was under pressure a little bit.
Hmm.
I don't want to give excuses, but yeah, I had some mental stress. Then organization to the IMDb in England. So it didn't go exactly like I wanted.
So it was stress coming from outside forces, you said? And you were getting stressed going into the show?
Well, it's something related to, you know, I it's kind of hard to bring up because I honestly never disliked Joe Weider. I like Joe Weider a lot. He was a good man. Joe is just as passionate as I am. And I felt when I met Joe, I connected. And I think some people thought that me and Joe have similar mentality. He loved Bible, and he knew I loved it. But anyway, something happened. It wasn't my fault, to be honest with you. Someone just tried very hard to have a relation with Joe. Mm-hmm. They were just fight with Joe. And all these folks, and that was it. And they got us both pissed off at each other. But anyhow, it worked. They did a good job. And people thought that it set you up to fight. Anyway, what's done is done, you know. But I want people to know that I've always liked Joe. I've always respected him. I've always bought his magazine since I was a kid in Lebanon. And he was the most important Bible I've ever had. He was. Mm-hmm. Even though he was not a from Bible, but he loved Bible. He loved muscle. He loved the art of Bible and so forth. So we're not going to see that in Joe Weider.
Yeah. So after that Olympia, Samir, what were your feelings? Were you like, I'm done with the IFBB? You know, were you so pissed off because you won and then you went down to sixth?
Many people felt I was robbed. And then I stopped blaming it to an individual, but it wasn't really their fault.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Joe Weider orchestrated it. Anyway, I don't think Joe ever did that. But there are some people they could really. They have the capacity to give you nightmares and bullshit and new things. But anyway, I know someone that worked at the Weider building. I'm not going to say his name. And that individual had a big hand, destructive, like a arrow trying to shoot me in the heart and trying to derail me. And he was from bodybuilding also. Who tried to make me argue with Joe. And they did a good job. And Joe was a victim and I was a victim. And yes, the argument happened. And yes, I aimed it on Joe. But later, according to Bob Kennedy, Joe, they did it so much that I argued with Joe. And was it Joe's fault? No. And I wasn't. And if you were in my place, you would be just as pissed, John. Yeah, but I tried my best. I tried so hard to actually keep my composure. And anyway, it's history now. Don't worry. Let's move to this.
All right. So after the 84 Olympia, though, you didn't compete in the 85, right? You went over to,
I'm so mad. I actually was mad.
Yeah.
And listen, I never really want to sue anybody in my life. I came in from overseas and I was naive. I didn't never really know anything about suing anybody. But I felt, you know, some people I was a kid and some people felt I was being robbed, being cheated.
Mm-hmm.
And then they offered to take my case and actually do it on contingency and all this shit. But, you know. And you know what? What's funny is I could have made tons of money from this, but I choose not to take the money and keep my relationship friendly, my friendship with Joe Weider. I swear to God. I actually settled the biggest case, lots of money. It was like a case was fought for $100 million, and it could easily, my punitive damages were like easily over $10 million. You know what? And I sat down with Joe for like 15 minutes and we patched everything up, no problem. Money was not my, you know, everything to me. It was just, I loved the game,
mm-hmm.
but of course I wanted to make a good living. And so
But Joe Weider knew that. But some people did a very good job, like I said, in damaging this relationship. And they did. And Joe and I, both of us, fell for it.
Hmm.
Yes, it's crazy. But I don't really like to talk about it. I don't know, because legally, maybe, John.
Yeah.
It's not thing to talk about something that has happened. But it is confirmed. And trust me when I say it's confirmed that me and Joe were really cool. And people did a very good job on getting us argue and so forth. And
okay. So
anyway, Joe, when Joe's gone, I was on good term with him. When he passed away, I was on good term. And okay. Even Lisa told me, said, Samir, my dad loves you. And I said, yeah, I love him too. But again, it's done.
Yeah, yeah. So tell me about that 85 WABA championship that was in, where was that in, Worcester, Massachusetts or something?
Yeah, the WABA Professional World Championship in Worcester. And I came in, and you know what? I trained with vengeance, and I came in really ready. I was better than 83 Olympia in that show.
Wow. Yeah. What'd you weigh in that show, Samir?
I was about 204, 203, somewhere in that neighborhood, but I really was a lot better, without a doubt. Even Mike Mensah and even Art Zeller said the same. And, I was just pissed off at the IBB, to be honest with you.
Yeah, right.
I was, because I worked so hard, and I was being robbed constantly. So I decided, why am I wasting my energy? And we have some guys who are, like, feisty. I wish I would say their name. I don't, you know. But, again, it's done.
85, there was some controversy with that WABA championship, right? Because they were supposed to give you some money, and then they ended up only giving you a sunbed or something?
Yeah, I was supposed to. The first place was $25,000. This is what I got.
Yeah.
But it wasn't easy to get. It was like, it was, you know, almost didn't get it. And then I was supposed to get a sun tanning, and then I did get it later. Wolf system, I don't know what it was.
Right, yeah.
I think the promoter wasn't really, he didn't keep his word. I think, you know what happened? Listen, Jeff King was competing, and Jeff King, as you know, he's a great bodybuilder. And that was his background there, and Jeff King was in shape.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff King was in shape, and I mean, half of the audience were for Jeff King.
Yeah.
And, you know, honestly, I like Jeff. I was there with him, but I was prepared. And, you know, when I came in a better shape than the 83 Olympia, you know, it was going to be tough for Jeff King. It doesn't matter how good he is.
Right.
Because it was tough for Haney to beat me at that condition. It was tough for guys like Zane and, you know, in 83. But in 85, it was actually better. So Jeff King came in second. Yeah, so that show was pretty competitive. But it was me, Jeff King, Edward Kawak, which Edward is bad to the bone, rest in peace.
Yeah.
Edward Kawak is one very good bodybuilder, to be honest with you. Edward came in third. Terry Pestel came in fourth. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, Serge Nabre was there with me.
Mm-hmm.
And Serge looked at me the night before, and he said, Samir, nobody's going to touch this. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I was ready. I mean, even at the night show, I was even scarier. But at the pre-judging, I walked out, and Mike Mensah was there. He told me, Samir, Lebanese pussycat. Mike was there. And Mike Mensah said, it's over. I walked out and said, it's over. And so I did a good job, and I was just so mad at what happened to me at the IFBB, so I took it out on Jeff King and company. And honestly, when I saw Jeff King, I said, wow, he's looking really good.
Yeah, he was a great bodybuilder.
He's probably going to give me a tough time, but it worked out in my favor. So
yeah, you were awesome in that show.
God, Kawak, thank you. Kawak was not 100%, because if Kawak was 100%, believe me, I think Kawak would be the guy to really be. It's not easy. I think Kawak is one of the most incredible bodybuilders. When he's 100% on, he's very good.
Yeah.
So, So that was happening in 85 in Worcester.
So then you didn't compete for a couple of years after that, right, Samir?
I didn't because, I remember that promoter was Cliff Brownfield, that big Cliff.
Cliff Sawyer.
Cliff Sawyer. I was discouraged from doing this competition, and Serge Nobre was upset because Serge was with me, and it's a WABA show. And Serge was the president of WABA. And Serge was so mad, and we went out to these guys' home, and we got the money, barely got it.
Yeah.
Got the check and got the suntaner, but, I wasn't really so keen on getting back to compete. And I told Serge, this is bullshit, man, to have to fight to get my money back. So,
right.
So anyway, yeah, I didn't compete in the IBB for a couple of years, and I was suspended for competing in the WABA show in Worcester. And then Ben Wheeler, rest in peace, I talked to Ben, and I think Ben was good. He was nice to me. I came in, I went through a different situation sometimes with IBB, and honestly, sometimes when you speak your mind, you get more into trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So in some cases, they want you to kiss ass and don't say anything. And this we go back, like Sean Ray was a outspoken, and they said, no, Sean Ray never won the Olympics because it was outspoken.
Right.
Anyhow, move on.
So what was it like when you came back finally in 1988? How were you feeling then? Because Haney had won, I think, four times already. And then you had some of the new guys like Gaspari and Christian and Labrada. They were all new guys that were coming in since you last won it.
Listen, 1 month before the 88th Olympia, I would have beaten anyone alive.
Really?
Easily.
Wow.
1988. I would have killed anyone. Easily. I'll be honest with you, I've done something different. You hear me, John?
Yeah, I can hear you. Go ahead.
I did something different, to be honest, and it didn't really backfire because I kept my nutrition as is, but my metabolism was very, very fast, okay? My metabolism was so fast that even I had Dr. Massimo Spatini was working with me, training with me, and in very educated, he understands what's going on, but I'll be honest with you, there's the first time, I'm going to talk, I don't give a crap. The first time I used a little bit of HGH, I did, because we know there was a book written, Grow Young with HGH. It's good to be used as an anti-aging, and it's not unhealthy, but if you do it the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And even at a smaller dose, it did really help me. I got super bigger. And 1 month before that Olympia in 88, there's no way I would have lost. I was at 223, shredded to beyond hell.
Wow.
And Arnold saw me. I never talked about it like this, but I'll tell you the truth. I never took HGH. And honestly, I hate HGH for bodybuilding competition. But yeah, if people want to use HGH as an anti-aging, 1.5 years, it's okay. It's not bad. It's not unhealthy. It's a fountain of youth. But the thing is, if you do it with bodybuilding the way they do it now, don't do it. The doctor that I was dealing with said, you know what? Even King Kong don't need more than 2 or 3 IU,
right.
4 IU. And he just was using a huge amount. And I never really abused anything, even though I'm telling you, I said it at liberty. I thought without you asking me. And so we need to educate some people. If GH is a good thing, not in heavy, small, and not in high doses, it's not a good thing because although it's going to help you recover and do better, it actually in higher dose, GH can contribute to more visceral fat and it's kind of, your body will change shape. You will get blockier. It's not a good thing.
Okay.
But anyway, being used in a small amount, I would say it's not bad at all. It's not unsafe.
Okay.
But if you ask me now, would I like my guy to take the age to get on stage looking like I did age, I would say, no, don't do it.
Okay.
Because you're not going to be as pretty. I'm serious.
Yeah.
The size comes in at a cost.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe it would look good the year, first year, and then the second year start looking worse and worse.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So what happens?
I've just done like one and a half IU to do the anti-aging. It's okay.
Yeah. So what happened in that last month, Samir? What happened to blow your condition?
What happened is when you take GH, your metabolism actually speed up. You need to eat more.
Oh, okay.
So and what happened, my metabolism was fast. And when I did what I did the year before and the year before, it wasn't the same because your body is changing. Your metabolic rate is different. And
right.
Even at 3,000 calories, my neck, gone.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes when you're flat, here's what happens. When you're flat, it looks like you're more fat when
right.
you're flat.
Right.
You remember this?
Right.
Fat and flat. You can't flex flat. You cannot flex fat or flat. And it appeared that when I was flat, I kind of like want to increase my diet and do a little bit more. So I went from 220 to 324 shredded, and I took myself down to 202. And I was eating, but man, I'm not a big eater. Right. I was like, even Dr. Massimo, he was with me, he said, no, I'm like, it wasn't just me. Me and him, we both have this technique. Because, you know, it was the first time we tried it. Our first time, really, that was my very first time to try it. And you know what? I don't advise to do it. Not the way I peak, not the way I've learned to peak in this, you know. Anyhow, it did backfire. And that's what I've done is I probably needed to eat like 5,000 calories at the time.
Wow, yeah.
Yes. And so when I dropped my calorie, it was like I eat and like my body disappeared. Something like go through me. So when I went down depleted, I tried to fill up. You know what? I could not load up. Everything I eat, it goes right through me.
Wow.
And yeah, that's basically what it is. And you know, like I said, it's bodybuilding and everything in life is about trial and error. And that's why I tell some of those guys to be careful and don't do irrational stuff. And don't try new things because you never know. Even with my experience, when I tried something new, it did backfire. That's what happened. I kind of blew my condition. According to Tom Platt, who I did a video, he said, and Tom Platt in that video, he said, 1 month before the Olympia, there's no doubt in my mind or anyone else's mind who's going to be the next Mr. Olympia. Had I stepped on the stage at 218, Lord have mercy, it would have been over for everyone.
Yeah.
Because I would huge and stayed wasted. It just didn't happen. And, you know, 1 week after that, I was 216. I was in the most incredible condition ever. I was way better even 82 and 84. But is it necessary? No, it's not. Because we go back to the saying, bigger is not better.
Yeah.
Is Phil Heath better at 275?
No.
Then he was at 250? No way, Jose. You think he is?
No way. Mm-mm.
And that's what I'm saying. You know, bigger is not necessarily better.
Yeah.
But we tried to do play the bigger game, and it backfired. It wasn't fat. It was more flat and didn't really peak properly.
Samir, do you think when you started competing back in the late 80s, when you were over 200, that you lost, that your waist got a little bit bigger because you were over 200, like compared to like 82 or 83 when you were in the 180s, 190s?
Honestly, in Boston and 85 in Worcester,
yeah.
I wasn't big enough and I didn't touch any of this crap. I never thought, you know, like Rod Ron said, oh, Samir discovered GH for the 83 Olympia. I didn't touch any of that. I swear to God, people don't believe me. You don't believe me. You don't have to believe me. And here I am talking about it and being truthful.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't touch this shit until 88.
Mm-hmm.
And I touched it at a small amount. it is still, it backfired.
Yeah.
And I know a top guy who actually was unbelievable at a huge, and it happened to me, exactly what happened to me. I saw him 1 month before the Olympia looking incredible, well, before his competition.
Who was this?
And then 1 month later, I look at him, he disappeared. He didn't look good at all.
Who was that, Samir?
I can't tell you.
Oh, okay.
I don't want to say it, but a guy I know. He was good.
Did you ever do the HGH again then after that?
Not for competition, no. I wouldn't do it because it's not afraid of doing it. I can make the adjustment, but I've used it a little bit for a health issue, for, you know, taking it, but I swear I haven't touched this for years. I don't even touch it now. If you tell me, should I, would be good. If I use it now for 1 IU a day or every other day, it's okay.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily, GH is not necessarily good just for bodybuilding competition. And if you do it for bodybuilding competition, make sure you eat more. And I would drop it 1 month before the show.
Yeah, okay.
In my opinion, for my you know, experience.
Yeah. Hey, let's talk about the 89 Arnold Classic, the very first Arnold Classic. Did Arnold call you up and ask you to do that show?
Well, I see Arnold all the time at World Gym and Zamir. Arnold, Zamir, you're going to go? I said, yeah, I'm going to go.
So that Arnold Classic, that first one, you were in really great shape, Samir. You were you ended up getting fourth place, but I thought you looked awesome in that show.
Arnold used to say, he told me this, Samir, and Arnold was correct. He said, Samir, every time you lose a show, it's your fault. And he was right because I could be in the money every time. And Arnold said, Samir, you could be in the money every effing time. He said, Samir, every time you lose, it's your goddamn effing fault and whatever. And so, and Arnold is right. But anyway, life is about trial and error, man. You know, you learn, you do things, and sometimes there are events in your life that actually kind of interfere with your tunnel vision and this and that, you know.
Yeah.
I'm human, man. And so,
do you think you should have done better in that contest?
I should have done better?
Yeah, at that first Arnold.
Honestly, I've been cheated so many times, I forgot which contest I was in. I felt many, many times that I could have done better. And, I know a show where I could have won a couple of them, and they gave me first place. And, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I wish I could tell you who was behind this bullshit, but I know for sure who was behind it. Now, I know for sure who's behind it. And you know what? Thanks to Bob Kennedy, we were able to zero in and find out who they were, the dirty, dirty guys. And they did. And they orchestrated bullshit against me. And so, you know how when I argue with Joe, it was like baseball kind of fight. You know, baseball fighting.
Right.
In my face, and I'm this face. But nothing ever happened where I thought, sure, I would never do that.
Right.
And so they went on and started saying, Samir did this, Samir did that. One dude looked like a bad boy. And, you know, at the time, a man by the name Alan Dolphin, who was the president of the Weider organization, not the IBB, but for Joe Wheeler's business. And he didn't see anything. And someone just told him, you know, Samir did this. I'm like, Samir didn't do it. You're a liar. It's one guy in that office has lied so much. And there's an art girl, Terry Lemro, was there. And she knows I never really had physical altercation with Joe. It was just this baseball kind of fighting disagreement. In fact, Joe Wheeler ran behind me to Irwin Street. He was running outside the office, came back, hugged me, come back, so, man, I'm like, anyway. But Joe Weider and I didn't have a shit about it. I wouldn't. He's like my father, man. He won't fight with your father. You know, he's like. But then when I start lying, they call this, they call, they even call Bob Kennedy. And Bob Kennedy says, Samira, I know you didn't do that. But he told me who did this, all this bullshit. And those guys are happy to see me fighting with Joe. And, you know, it's like an earthquake that was one or two on the Richter scale, and they will tell you it was 10. It was just one or two. It's like, after, it's just minor. And they came out to say, oh, Samir did this, Samir put Joe on the wall, Samir did this.
Mm-hmm.
Liar. And so they wanted to magnify things so they could make me look like a bad guy. And they wanted people, the judges, to go against me and all this bullshit. Okay, okay, let's change the topic, man. Let's talk about bodybuilding.
All right. So you ended up competing then, Samir, until about 96, right? So you were like in your late 30s around?
I think I did one show and I didn't do good in 96, and because another thing, another experiment that I tried that actually failed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but something, like I said, now I tell people, do not attempt to do anything new unless you take your time and you try it way before and stuff like that. It, you know, it's just, you know.
What made you decide?
I was surrounded by intelligent people, to be honest with you, very intelligent. And sometimes we try things to make one to look better, but that's sometimes you take a gamble.
Mm-hmm.
And if that gamble may, instead of you being at first, you'll come out at 10th.
Yeah.
So, well,
what made you decide to stop competing, Samir? Because I know you're really passionate about the sport and you loved it, but when did you decide?
I just thought that, you know, I felt I won the Olympia, I won the Universe, I won a couple of Grand Prix shows, I won a few things, and that, you know, and for a period of time, I felt like I was swimming against the tide, like I said. I felt like I started in my head thinking that even though I'm going to be 100%, they're not going to give it to me. I started thinking. So when you have this negative thought, you know this is not going to be good. So I decided not to compete.
Yes.
And you can't. I'm going to tell my guys, the minute you have negative or you have some doubt, don't do it.
Right.
You can't doubt what you do.
did you feel like this new generation?
Mm-hmm.
Like the new generation of bodybuilders, like Dorian and Livroni and Paul Dillette, all these mass monsters. Did you feel like it was just another era and it was just something you didn't fit into?
No. No, not at all. In fact, I told Paul Dillette that he was very good when he got ripped. But again, Dillette was fantastic, but he also doesn't have the mastery of presentation that was actually came back on him.
Yeah.
Dillette was incredible. He's like incredible. He had everything. He's got legs, he's got calves, arms, shoulders, he's got everything.
Right.
But he didn't really present it properly. That was one of Paul Dillette's weaknesses. His presentation could be better.
Yeah.
But he's a mass monster. Kevin Levrone. I was friends with Kevin too, and Kevin was great. And he did really good. He kept it old school, massive. But I mean, right after that, bodybuilding started to get ruined.
Mm-hmm.
But they started to look unappealing, and we started getting blocky looking, especially the stomach.
Right.
So when we stomach situation with big bubbly stomach, this is when I said, fuck.
Yeah.
It does hurt.
Yeah, that's what I thought. You know, I thought this is a different era, and the look totally changed, and it wasn't the same as when you came into it, you know?
It's not the same, you know, as John. It's sad now to see that everybody's looking to be massive and have kids that want to get huge in 1 year or 2 years, super huge.
Yeah.
And then after 2 years, they're done. I mean, it happened around, you know, remember Nasser, rest in peace, somebody was really good.
Yeah.
Really good. I remember that in Chicago, him and Dorian were head to head. But also, guys like Nasser are somebody who's no longer with us. And I think he did something that actually sent him early to his grave. Rest in peace. I feel bad. And I think some of those gurus that you work with, they contributed quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
His passing. And that's sad. None of those guys did it maliciously to hurt him. But like I said, just listen, go back to basic, man. Even me, if I had done exactly what I'd done in the 82, 83, 84, 85, perfect.
Yeah.
And if it's not broken, why fix it?
Yeah.
But, you know, we always have this mentality of trying to get better. And I honestly wouldn't do it in nothing I've done it dangerously, no.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you do something different, not necessarily dangerous, but it will backfire.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
So it's better not to experiment the last minute before the show.
Right.
Never.
Right.
That's one thing I learned for sure.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot of people nowadays, they do it the wrong way. And some of those self-proclaimed guru, they competed once or twice, and some of them never competed.
Mm-hmm.
And they are very irrational in their recommendation. Even some of those great guys, they came in looking good a year or two, and year three and four, they start looking bad. Stomach are bloated, they got square. I mean, you know, it happened quite a bit. And it's a jungle, John. We need an interview just for this topic.
Yeah.
All the insanity and bodybuilding.
Yeah.
We need to have a topic called about the insanity. And you know what? Let's go back to real bodybuilding. Because the newest cocktail they're doing is a no-no. And it's not necessary and it's not needed. And to get big and looking like shit, it doesn't make sense to me, you know?
Right, exactly.
And you might, you know, you do something new, you may do it 1 year or two, and then after that, it's over.
Yeah, exactly.
Things that get horrible.
Right.
So why rushing? Why rushing? If you want to do it for the long haul,
yeah, you want your time.
Be healthy, you want to live long like Bill Pearl and Frank Zane.
Yes.
Yeah. Practice health and intelligent way of prepping.
Yeah.
You will look good and you will live long to talk about it.
Right, exactly.
And as you know, we have lost quite a bit of bodybuilders because of insanity, to be honest.
Yeah.
And some of those gurus themselves almost died. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that tells me they weren't malicious. They didn't do it to hurt their clients. But you don't turn your client into
experiments.
Experiments. It's not a laboratory animal. You don't do this. Right. And anyway, I wouldn't experiment with anything dangerous, that's for sure. And the drugs are dangerous, man. And I'll tell you what, I get people calling me from Iraq, from Iran, from Syria, from Jordan, and kids are dying daily. You don't hear about it. You only hear about, you know, Dallas, MacArthur, who actually everybody's trying to cover up, say, oh, he died choking.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Dallas, rest in peace. It was really good. This guy, Dallas, could have been Mr. Olympia.
Yeah.
And why rush in Dallas? He passed away at 26. Poor guy. I mean,
jeez.
It's really heartbroken. It hurts. And someone is trying to say, oh, he was choking. He was choking, that's why he died. They won't tell you. Whomever advised him, honestly, those are the guilty, not Dallas. Dallas was young. He's taking advice. But, you know, you take ill advice. I don't want a name. I know a couple of people now. They're like, oh, I'll try to defend insulin. You're like, shut up.
Mm-hmm.
There's no room for this garbage. You could use it one time, and you could work two times, but then after that, you will have a health problem. And even from the first time you do it wrong, you could die.
Yeah.
Why? We don't need it. Arnold, Sergio, Zane, we didn't touch this shit.
Right.
Why do you need it now? Why? You want to have 20-pound visceral fat in your stomach and say, I'm big. And you want to have a big shoulder, big arm, but they don't look gnarly. They don't look etched.
Yeah.
What, you know, looking at, go on stage looking like a refrigerator.
Right.
And they all look like a refrigerator. We don't need this shit look.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything they do now is drugs related. And like, even they scratch their hair, they have to be drunk. You know, if I tell you some of the things done, it's insane. I don't really want to talk about it. Some of people will pick on that and start doing it. Mm-hmm. They think, yeah, that's what, you know, it's just, it's a jungle, man. It is sad.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be like that.
It's not needed. You know, let's not bullshit ourselves. All the former Mr. Olympia and all that, they use something, but they never really abuse.
Yeah.
I mean, here, you know, you can go out and buy some wine, have a couple glasses of wine, get buzzed. But go buy 10 bottles of wine and vodka and drink all of it. You're going to mess up and you're going to hurt yourself.
Right, right.
I'm telling you, go have, do it and be rational. Don't try new things. Okay? Yep. I'm telling people that I'm not perfect. I was never perfect. I make mistakes, but thank God I didn't do anything, a deadly mistake. You can't make, you have a deadly mistake, it kills you. You're done from one little stupid mistake.
Right, right.
And so we need to really bring awareness and tell people, you know, you do. I mean, they call me from my, say, oh, it's okay, can I use it? I said, no, 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 you're not going to use that. Not with me, not on my watch. You're not going to use it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's okay. Look, I said, no, no, it's not okay. If you touch it, don't bother me. I don't care. Take your $1,000, keep it. I don't want to work with someone like this.
Right, right.
I don't. But you have some of those girls, they don't give a shit. Okay, all right, take this much. Do it this way. Send me that $5,000 or $2,000. And you know what? I don't want to work with people that are going to end up hurting themselves because I don't want to take part and be somewhat responsible for their disaster.
Right.
That's why I tell them, you know, I have guys come from India sometimes. They don't have money. They don't make a lot of money in India. And say, to me, sir, I do this. And I'm like, no, why? No. Jean, we have some women nowadays claim to be they claim to be your coaches. I mean, I don't want to hunt one individual, but there's this lady also claiming that she's a major coach and she's doing this and that. And again, an Indian guy blew the whistle on her. He told me what he was doing. I said, oh my God, what are you doing to yourself?
Yeah.
He said, but this lady, you know, I said, what are you doing? He told me what he was doing. Like, nearly 4,000 milligrams every 4 days.
Wow.
Even Godzilla would need a quarter. So it's a jungle, John.
Yeah, I know.
And that's why I don't work with any abused kids. I thought I could help them, but I don't want them out of, you know, sign with me. They come in abused. If they want to work with me, be prepared. I want you to do it the healthy way.
Yeah.
I want you to be healthy. It look incredible, old school looking body, and live happily ever after and talk about it. If you want to do stupid things, thinking more is good, it's you're wrong.
Right.
Because I know I didn't even do a fraction of this number. I didn't.
Yeah, I believe it. I believe it.
Believe me. Believe me. I have absolutely no reason to bullshit anyone.
Right.
This body only sport can be very healthy, but you know, at some point, when you compete at this high level, John, you're going to use a little bit of cosmetic, a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do it safely, yes, you can. But would I suggest we can use it? It's up to you.
Yeah.
I know you can do it safely, but don't just listen to inexperienced people. Don't.
Yeah.
You don't. I mean, look at you compete at natural, and look at how much muscle you put on.
Right, right.
You see what I'm saying, John? And that's what I tell people. I said, you don't need this shit.
Yeah.
Take it too much. And, you know, there are things maybe you want to use, but you can be okay, but don't abuse.
Right, right.
Anyway, another topic.
Yeah, exactly.
We need some time for this.
Right. All right, Samir. Well, we can wrap it up here. I just want to say thanks for doing part two of this interview finally. We were able to finally get it in. And I think you'll go down in history as one of the best Mr. Olympias ever, and that's something to be proud of. I think you had one of the greatest physiques of all time, one of the most symmetrical, and your passion for the sport is still really evident, obviously, because you're still very passionate about it, even after all these years. So it was great to finally
John,
talk to you.
John, I really appreciate it. And, you know, I'm not just saying it because you're face-to-face with me. That's one thing I like about you, John, because you're passionate, you're for real, and I can tell from your question, and every time I see you and I hang out with you and Platt, and I can tell you fit perfectly.
Right.
But I'm always happy and honored to contribute with you whenever you want. We can talk number 3 or 4 in the future.
All right. Sounds good.
It's a great chatting with you, John, and I look forward to see you in Vegas.
Yeah, me too.
It was old school.
Yeah.
Keep it old school, man.
That's going to be a good time. I can't wait.
Yeah, we'll have a great time. Yeah, really looking forward to it, John.
All right, buddy. All right, I'll talk to you soon, sir. Thank you.
Hey, John.
Yes, sir.
John, you got to keep it old school.
That's right.
You see, man?
Still flexing.
It's all there. Look, it's still there.
Yeah, it's still there. All right,
buddy. Take care, John.
Take care. Thank you.
Always a pleasure talking to you.
All right, take care.
Hasta luego.
All right.
All right. Thank you for listening to our interview with the great Samir Banute, 1983 Mr. Olympia. I'm glad Samir was finally able to get that interview in with us. We've been waiting a long time for that. And I also want to thank our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. And I want to thank all of you that contribute to the Patreon account. If you want to contribute to the website at all, if you want to donate any money per month, you can just go to our website at bodybuildinglegendshow.com. And in the upper right-hand corner of the website, you'll see the Patreon button. If you wanted to donate a little bit of money to the website to keep it going, I really would appreciate that. Thanks for considering that. All right, before we go, I do want to read this article written by Gary Bartlett. It was featured in the March 1984 issue of Iron Man magazine, and it was called The Superman of Mr. Olympia. And this is all about the 1983 Mr. Olympia contest. So here we go. Says, I just saw Samir only a few hours ago up in his room and I couldn't believe it. He is 25% better than last year with cuts so deep that when he tenses his thighs, it looks like the muscle is going to split and fall away from the bone. The man is unreal. I can't wait to see anyone touching him, or I can't see anyone touching him at tomorrow's show. It was the eve of the 1983 Mr. Olympia. John Balick, Mike Nevue, and I were having supper at the Munich Hilton Hotel restaurant discussing tomorrow's show. Balick is one of the world's top bodybuilding photographers, and his opinions regarding contest favorites are as accurate as his precise photographs. His statements regarding Samir being in condition certainly would go unquestioned. After all, we all remember how, after years of competing out of shape, Samir shocked us last year in London, ripped to shreds. Many people felt that his fourth place finish was unfair and that he should have placed higher. One thing that most of us remember at that show was that when he was announced fourth, he raised his finger in the number one sign, vowing that 83 would be his year. Discussing this with Balick and Nevue, I soon got the feeling that perhaps Samir would live up to his prediction. In fact, only a couple tables away, Samir sat in his tailored gray sweatsuit with Samir Banute, 1983 Mr. Olympia, written on the back. This confident attitude would certainly back up the fact that Samir must have ultimate faith that he was ready. Oh no, Balick replied. Look at what Samir's eating. As we looked over, Samir was about to dine on the many pleasures from the luxurious buffet which the hotel sponsored. Mike exclaimed, John, you better go over there and tell Samir not to eat any of that stuff. It's probably full of salt, and by tomorrow, if he eats it, he'll swell up like a balloon. John nodded his head in agreement, but felt it was not any of his business to nag Samir. I maintained that if he was Samir's friend, that it was his business to tell Samir what he thought, regardless of what Samir might think. But Mr. Olympia was on the line. If he didn't want to warn Samir and Samir lost, then he would feel pretty bad after. I could see that John was a bit reluctant to go over to Samir's table. After all, Samir should know that he must be careful of what he eats. Mr. Olympia condition is not a hit or miss effort, and the least bit of the wrong food could make the difference between first and second place. Finally, John's sensitive nature got the best of him, and he strolled over to Samir's table to give him a few words of properly applied encouragement. I'm not sure what John said, or do I know if Samir listened, but in less than 24 hours, we would see. In conjunction with the IFBB, Albert Busack would host this year's Olympia, which was shaping up to be the most dramatic and competitive one yet. The city of Munich is beautiful, and the last week in September makes it even more spectacular with its early autumn decor. We were also fortunate enough to catch the beginning of the world-famous Oktoberfest. In fact, I well remember my experience with Oktoberfest every time I see promoter Wayne D'Amelia and Flex editor Bill Dobbins. One evening, Dobbins suggested we check this famous festival out. Bill had spent a couple years in Munich, and he knew the city and its customs well. Wayne and I decided we wanted to see everything there was about this famous celebration. As we sat in one of the crowded beer halls, swinging our huge steins of beer, I was beginning to realize that the Germans had the right idea when it came to celebrating special occasions. Before the evening was over, I started having second thoughts about this custom. As Wayne and I maneuvered our way back to the hotel, it became clear that the large steins of German beer were substantially stronger than America's best. "Just wait," Wayne shouted. "My New York Olympia will be the ultimate in physique contest. It'll be the best one yet." I replied, "I'm sure it will, Wayne. But first, let's see how the 83 event turns out." "That's a good idea," Wayne replied. USAC's dream of the Olympia would soon be realized as 15 of the world's best IFBB bodybuilders pumped in preparation for the prejudging, which was only minutes away. The site of the championships would be one of the modern structures, which was used in 72 for the Olympic Games. This arena at one time was used for bike racing. Today, the track would be partially removed, making way for a beautifully constructed stage facing the prospects of over 4,000 screaming German bodybuilding fans. In the days following the contest, Busack and his people would work feverishly to assure us of the finest Olympia to date. At a meeting the evening before the competition, it was decided by the IFBB to use the mandatory posing round first instead of the relaxed phase as done in the past. In their wisdom, the IFBB officials felt that this would separate the favorites from the rest of the pack immediately. Often in the past, where the relaxed round was held first, certain competitors don't seem to really get noticed until the second round. The result is often valuable points getting lost. We all remember this happening in McAway at last year's Olympia. I think this is an excellent improvement in our present system of judging, and the IFBB must be praised for their insight. Rumors ran rampant the days preceding this event as to who the winner would be. The big question on everyone's mind was, could Zane pull it off? We had heard he was ripped and in his 79 condition. His mistake of last year would not be repeated. However, in 79, he was under 40 years of age, and 4 years in this game can take its toll. This was 1983, and Zane was now over 40 years of age. We would soon see if his age would play a part in his attempt at four Olympias. As mentioned earlier, Benoit definitely was a favorite, at least according to Balik and Nevue, and more importantly, Benoit himself. I had seen the gargantuan Lee Haney only a few days before at Albert Busack's brand new Modern Fitness Center, and there was no question that Haney would shock a few judges when he walked on stage. The man was awesome, and he could pull off an upset. Egypt's Mohamed Makaway, now living in Canada and working closely with successful gym owner Ken Wheeler, has risen to the top of the bodybuilding world faster than a new cruise missile. It's no secret that many people in our game feel that Vince Gironda is somewhat of a crackpot when it comes to his eccentric bodybuilding ideas. However, since McAway has listened and practiced what the Iron Guru said, he has not lost a show. With his impressive string of victories under his posing trunks, it was a sure bet that McAway could be Mr. Olympia 1983. Rick Wayne boasted that Bertel Fox was the man to beat. Wayne has been known to push the occasional line of bull. He and Fox are good friends, so naturally he would not say anything else regarding his associate. Most of us in this game know that Fox has all the ingredients to put together an Olympia-winning package. However, Fox is the only man able to put these attributes to work. His task would not be easy. Following are the men of the 83 Olympia in the order they place, with the last man first. Lance Dreyer, 217 points in 15th place. It's unfortunate that a man with the splendid muscle size and bulk of Dreyer can't seem to find the handle on contest peaking. Today, Lance was flat. especially standing relaxed. In certain poses, he looked great, but the deep striations needed to place higher were far from evident. Lance needs to specialize on the finer muscles of his physique to give him that polished finish needed to push to the top spot. His weakness certainly is not in the muscle size department. Ed Corney, 202 points in 14th place. This is the first time I've seen Ed since 1981. Ed is a favorite with the German people and very good friends with Busack. At Busack's request, Ed decided it might be nice to give it one last shot, especially considering he was celebrating his 50th birthday this year. As Ed gracefully glided from one pose to another, I was suddenly cast back to another time in our bodybuilding history where the likes of Arnold and Franco reigned supreme. This was Ed's era, and to watch him pose once again made us all feel warm. It was obvious that Ed had forgotten little of his pioneered art form of posing. His condition was excellent, and the man seems to defy the aging process. Hail Ed Corney, the champion immortal. Gerard Benoit, 201 points in 13th place. A past world champion, Benoit was out of his league today. In spite of this, he was in absolutely incredible shape as striations crisscrossed his pecs. His skin was tissue paper thin, resulting in a translucent appearance. Unfortunately, he does not have the aesthetics or the structure to support the type of muscle to win the Olympia. Dale Ruplinger, 173 points in 12th place. This was Dale's first outing at a professional competition, and to say the least, the Olympia is one tough place to start getting your feet wet. In Dale's case, he almost got his feet cut off. His physique was well prepared and ripped to shreds. However, his stage presence and posing was quite amateurish. Dale was very nervous, and it's very hard to disguise this in front of seasoned judges. If Dale gets a bit more experience and improves his presentation, he may eventually start placing in the money. James Gobert, 158 points, 11th place. James' situation was very similar to Ruplinger's, except he was more relaxed and he posed like a seasoned veteran. Gobert was much thicker than when I last saw him at the World Championships. His extra density and excellent posing allowed him to finish in respectable position against much larger men. Gobert had done his homework, and he prepared himself admirably for his first pro outing. Jacques Nouville, 155 points, 10th place. Handsome, ripped, and symmetrical was Jacques Nouville. His posing was one of the most entertaining of the entire contest. Unfortunately, during the afternoon prejudging, as he proceeded to go through the final phase of his routine, disaster struck as he almost forgot part of it. This was unfortunate, and it cost him valuable points. However, I was most relieved to see him go through it perfectly during the evening presentation. Nouville combined many classic Zane-like poses in his routine, which accented his symmetrical development perfectly. It's sad to see a physique the caliber of Nouville's only placed 10th. This is how competitive the Olympia is. Hubert Metz, 152 points in 9th place. Competing in his home country, Metz was in the usual rip condition. Watching him, you wonder if he can get his skin any tighter. Hubert's weakness could not be his condition, but genetics. Unfortunately, his structure provides an awkward balance to his physique. Each part just fails to blend together in a smooth package. This is unfortunate because he could not have been more ripped. Johnny Fuller, 119 points in 8th place. Certainly, this must have been a very disappointing placing for England's Johnny Fuller. In the past few years, he has always placed in the top 6 of most of the pro shows. His condition was the classic Fuller, ripped to shreds and vascular look, except he was sporting a mustache. This seemed to add a distinguished look to Johnny. Unfortunately, the judges were looking from the neck down. Judging from Johnny's outstanding condition, I found it very hard to find where he could improve. Albert Beckles, 99 points in 7th place. Most of us in the bodybuilding world are beginning to wonder when this man will start to show the signs of aging. Albert would not let us down today as he was in unbelievable condition. Perhaps a little smaller than when I last saw him, but he was incredible. His famous arms had lost none of their impressiveness, and as he lifted them up in one of his classic bicep poses, your eyes became glued on these wonders of nature. Josef Wilkosch, 95 points in 6th place. Germany's colossal Josef Wilkosch had tortured himself for over a year in preparation for this event. It was no secret that he was one of the favorites, and Josef is a type of man who does not want to let his fans down. Josef is extremely popular in his home country of Germany, and it was obvious from the round of applause he got that every time he appeared on stage that his people were behind him. Josef had not disappointed anyone because this was the best condition I've ever seen him compete in. His size was staggering, especially when he stood beside one of the smaller competitors. His arms and thick pecs were the most obvious, and I even noted a tremendous improvement over last year in his thigh cuts. In the past, he was always weak and mechanical in the posing round with very little expression in his poses. Today, his presentation was substantially improved to the point of being most entertaining. There were a couple of poses in his routine that were classics, particularly his version of the double bicep pose where he leans to the side and slants his arms upward. I understand photographer Art Zeller helped him a few weeks before the show. Obviously, Artie's years of knowledge were responsible for Joseph's tremendous improvement. Bertel Fox, 87 points in fifth place. Most of us in the sport all admit that the awesome Englishman Bertel Fox probably has more muscle than any other bodybuilder in history, with the exception of Sergio Oliva. With all this potential, Fox never seems to be able to put everything together to pull off a win or even a second place. His physique literally explodes with slabs of thick muscle when he hits all the mandatory poses, and his arms are so super huge that when he does a side chest pose, his biceps are wider than his head. There is no question that Fox is one of a kind. Then why did he only manage a fifth-place finish? He was close to being in his best-ever condition, and his posing brought the Germans to their feet. His impact on the 4,000 screaming German fans was a phenomenon that I will never forget. I've been attending pro contests for 5 years, and I've never seen an audience respond to a competitor like these Germans. It seemed they preferred pure, raw, brute muscle and power, and Bertel fueled their fires with one most muscular pose after another. Each time he flexed his gargantuan biceps, they screamed for more. The pro-Fox crowd became even more enraged when Fox was announced fifth. The whistling and booing got so intense, I began to fear that we might have a riot on our hands. Eventually, the angry Fox supporters began to quiet down and things soon cooled off, with the exception of Fox, who upon accepting his check, stormed off the stage in disgust. Considering the response he received from the crowd, his immediate reaction would be predictable considering the emotional state of mind he was in. But it must be made clear that in the IFBB, standards for winning an Olympia requires considerably more than a series of incredible most muscular poses. Bertel failed to really stand out in the relaxed round, and he was just a shade off. Several of his mandatory poses are unmatched, however, and a couple he fails to get the most out of them. I always notice that in a double biceps pose, he seems to hold his gigantic arms too low. Perhaps with another year of refinement, Fox could climb to the top. One thing's for sure, most of the Germans felt that he should have been much higher. Frank Zane, 80 points in fourth place. There was no question that fourth place for Frank must have been the most disappointing placing in his career. Coming into this event, there was no question in Frank's and many people's minds that he would win the 83 Olympia. As Frank was announced fourth, his face revealed his extreme shock. There was no question that Frank was in his legendary rip state. His symmetry was outstanding, as well as his presentation and polish. Frank was ready for a Mr. Olympia title, which would have made it number four. Unfortunately, he did not count on the new blood that has seemed to have seeped into the current scene. 5 years ago, Frank was the new blood who finally, after paying many dues, was able to collect. Today, others would step in front of Frank and collect first. The only fault that I could criticize Frank for would be his lack of size, especially in comparison to the huge Haney, Fox, and Benoit. However, this had never hurt Frank before, but today it cost him valuable points. Frank fought bravely and is still an experience to see this wonder of the bodybuilding world compete in top condition. Lee Haney, 73 points in third place. Probably one of the surprises of the competition was to see the monstrous Lee Haney finish in third spot. This was only Lee's third pro show and his first Olympia. He was in his absolute best condition, and his main weapon was his towering size, which was far superior to the smaller Zane. Each fought to the finish, and Haney just narrowly edged the more experienced Zane out for third. Haney is strongest when he's just standing relaxed, where his width and ponderous size clearly stands out superior to many of the others. In his compulsory poses, he often dwarfs many of the others because of his tremendous lats, which seem to spread across the entire stage when he tenses them. In comparison to Zane, he was much thicker and larger, but not quite as ripped. He clearly had improved a great deal on his free posing, which could have been responsible for slipping by Zane. His routine was smooth, and he easily moved his awesome mass from one smooth pose to another. He was also a favorite with the beef-hungry Germans. Mohamed Makaway, 40 points in second place. Judging from the score, the Magic Egyptian was a clear second. Most of us expected that perhaps McAway would win the Olympia. He had stormed all the pro shows last season, and he'd been training very hard for this one. I noticed immediately that Muhammad would have trouble as soon as he made his way on stage. The carved, super hard quality he displayed in London was just not there. He was very close, but the razor sharpness tended to be only days away. Regardless, Muhammad was as ripped as Haney or Fox, and his spirited posing was far superior to the others. No other competitor has his stage presence and magnetism. He really enjoys competing and fighting, always smiling and flexing for a bit more edge in his poses. It's McAway's deep competitive spirit that has taken him above the rest and placed him at the top. His professionalism and class is very similar to Dickerson's. They win by letting their competitors make the mistakes. Muhammad combined a superb package in the way of classic symmetry, fullness, sharp separation, and artistic posing. His only mistake was that slight lack of deep sharpness, which he clearly displayed at last year's event. Sameer Banoot, 29 points, number one. A clear-cut winner was the superb physique of Banoot. It must be said that perhaps McAway was not that far off his London condition, and that it may only have seemed that way because Banoot was indeed 25% better than he was last year. I don't know whether Bailick deterred him from eating or not, but regardless, Sameer knew that what he was doing because right from the minute he set foot on stage, he was the winner. In three rounds, the judges had him scored four first-place votes, which made it near impossible for anyone else to come near him. Sameer has created a new standard for the Olympia crown. He is thick, symmetrically perfect, wider shoulders with a tiny waist and hip structure, then swelling to deeply cut and separated thighs. In the past three Olympia winners, you can pick out faults. However, when you study Sameer, it's almost impossible to find a flaw in his perfect physique. Many people predicted that Sameer would eventually win the Olympia. The only thing that held him back for the past few years was the fact that he was not ripped enough, although he was very close in London. The irony of Sameer's win is that this is his first major professional contest that he's ever won. One must consider this a tremendous accomplishment considering the many contests that a pro has to compete in order to build up a reputation. Perhaps this is why Banoot was able to present such a complete package at last year's event. He did not waste valuable energy competing in less important contests. Sameer concentrated on winning the Olympia and prepared himself accordingly. He is an amazing champion, and should he continue to compete and improve, his already spectacular physique will set the standards that others will be judged by. Sameer has the type of physique that appeals to everyone, the fitness types as well as the hardcore bodybuilder. His package at the 83 event was complete and without fault. I was there, and my choice would have been Sameer without question. Perhaps the Germans liked Fox's mass and size, but this does not warrant an Olympia win. Banoot was a definite winner without question. He has it all, and he will take quite an accomplishment to push him off his throne come next year in New York. Sameer claims that he will be even better then and will defend his title. I, for one, have decided to listen to Sameer. After all, who am I to question Mr. Olympia? Considering the fact that Sameer won the Olympia, there's one thing that keeps sticking in my mind. I wonder what Sameer did eat the night before the contest. Obviously, it did not harm him. I kind of think that we may have been a little bit paranoid because Sameer Banoot knew what he was doing all the time. All right. Great article by Gary Bartlett about the 1983 Mr. Olympia, Sameer's crowning moment where he won the biggest title in bodybuilding. All right. That is it for this week, guys. I am going to continue recuperating, and I will be back next week. Hopefully, we'll have an interview with Albert Beckles, or maybe we'll get that anniversary show up, whatever comes first. Take care of yourself, and I'll see you guys next week.